Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak.
Trevor, we just got a thick boiler on Twitter.
Wow, that was quick. That was right off the bat.
The beginning of the podcast, literally in that moment.
Right off the bat. Wait, who's the thick boy? Who's the thick boy?
Check your mentions.
Okay, all right. Okay, hold on. Hold, please. I'm checking for the thick
highlight clip.
Boy. Update. Thick boy update.
Whoa!
Holy smokes.
Dude, wait till you get to 10 seconds.
What? No!
Yeah.
No!
Does this kid
No! Play? What? Who is this kid?
Are you kidding me? It's like kind of cut off. It's clearly hot.
There's one of the comments that says, if Zion Williamson played football, and I couldn't agree more right now.
Oh my gosh, this is unhealthy.
What? All right, okay, we at least have to retweet this so people can go back and find it. We're recording this podcast, what is it, Tuesday night? So if you see us talking about it on Twitter and you missed it, please go look on both of our timelines and look at this phenomenal thick boy high school running back who might just be pound for pound the greatest athlete I've ever seen in my life.
It's like if Dayton Faruta could run.
Wow, you might, yeah, that's actually not a bad comparison. Anyways... As much as I would love to talk about thick boy running backs for 40 minutes, which we could very well do. In fact, y'all have the power on Fan Friday to ask us our top five thick boy running backs of all time.
That question itself is an hour long.
Just saying. Right now, we're running through the divisions in the NFL. We're previewing every single team. We'll eventually, over the next 2 weeks, we're giving you our outlook on their rookie classes, their starting depth chart, storylines, and whether or not your favorite team can contend for a Super Bowl, which, you know, unless you're the Patriots or the Eagles, I'm just going to say no. And Ben's already shaking because I brought up that the Eagles are Super Bowl contenders in yet another show.
Very interesting take on the Chiefs there, Tiger.
Listen, man, as long as I've lived long enough to know that as long as Brady's in the NFL, the AFC's locked up. I mean, God clearly favors one man over the rest, and Tom Brady is that man. So, that's why I'm saying the Patriots. We're not talking about the Patriots today, though. We're talking about the AFC North teams. One of these days, Ben, I'm just going to be totally random with it, and I'm going to tell you we're doing one division, and then when we start the podcast, I'm going to tell you another, so you're totally thrown off, and you got to get, off the cuff stuff.
You say that, but you've only got four episodes left on which to possibly do it. So
it's coming in hot. It's gonna be coming in hot. AFC North. Ben, you are going through a series right now on the draftnetwork.com. If you guys have never been there, you should go visit it. It's a pretty fine website, if I do say so myself. And you're going through a kind of a fun, lighthearted series where you say, hey, how your team won Super Bowl, what is it, 54, right? Is it 54?
Yeah.
So you're going through every team, and you're basically creating realities in which what it would take for these teams to win this year's Super Bowl. And this week you got to the Baltimore Ravens as one of the teams that you went through. And sometimes, as you have said before, sometimes they're more serious than others. But for the
when I wrote the Tampa Bay one, Trevor, I would have loved to have made it serious, but brother.
Listen, it's I like the way that you put it anyways. You had a lot of fun with that one, so I enjoyed that one anyways, even though you don't believe in Tampa Bay. You're not alone.
I think I gave them a 3 out of 1,000 chance of winning.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, man.
The Baltimore Ravens one was really interesting because you brought up a good point in the pistol offense, and you kind of got into an actual serious discussion about schematics in today's NFL football and how spreading the football out and going sideline to sideline doesn't necessarily have to mean that the rushing attack is being depleted or not effective anymore. It's just different. And we're seeing in certain teams, mainly one with a running quarterback, and Lamar Jackson's at the very top of that list, how running this pistol offense can really give them a look that not many other teams in the league can give them, and potentially give them a lot of success. So I'll let you kind of explain that and give me your little outlook on the Ravens here.
Yeah, so the piece which, you know, I would recommend reading because I think it's a little bit easier to get it when you can read it over a couple of times. Podcast's a little trickier. But if you're unfamiliar with the you know, we talk about the pistol offense. What's the pistol offense? It's like just the alignment of the quarterback. That's what the pistol is. And the offense, you know, kind of stems from this. But the basic, you know, track that you want to take mentally is, okay, you know, the NFL is increasingly embracing the spread. What's the spread? The spread gets mutated into a lot of different things. But basically we're talking about taking guys out of the backfield, getting them out wide, getting slots out on the field, using three wide receiver sets to a side, and forcing the defense to cover all 53 yards horizontally on the field, running quick constraint plays, boundary plays, bubble screens, quick slants, even the RPO game, as an ability to, again, force the defense to cover all this green grass. And so you're decreasing the density of the defense, still 11 players, but they're so spread out, and now it's hypothetically easier for your athletes to move the ball on them. The spread offense is run from the shotgun. It needs to be for several reasons, not least among which you need to be throwing forward passes. You want to get the ball out quicker, so on and so forth. But the shotgun offense presents an issue for your running game. It's very hard to establish a downhill running attack. Not impossible, because I know, you know, there's a high school coach somewhere, but it's difficult to establish a downhill running attack out of a shotgun because you're back really can't go behind the quarterback. If he does, he's like 10 yards deep, and it's unlikely he's going to gain much positive yardage if he's starting 10 yards behind the line. Also, your back is stuck to one side of the quarterback, so you have to align at the same depth as him. And so defenses can set the running strength of their box opposite the back, because if the back's to the quarterback's right, well, the run play is probably going to the left, because that's where the running back has to start headed just to get the football in the first place, you know, to get the handoff. And so the pistol offense is the pistol alignment, and the offense that grows from it, I should say, is a really exciting halfway point. The truth always being somewhere in the middle. It's a really exciting halfway point between the downhill rushing attacks that lots of teams want to be able to execute well, and like, you know, the Rams are a really good example. They run the ball under center a lot, and that's like, they're able to get Gurley moving downhill, and you see that how that affects
defense. So did the Falcons when they made their Super Bowl run.
Sure.
They ran a ton under
Kyle
center.
Shanahan.
Yes.
Yeah, and San Francisco is another good example. San Francisco's out here running 21 personnel. They got a fullback still in there, man. Like, you know, it's wild stuff. So you want to be able to establish that downhill running attack, and you'd like to be able to hide the direction of your runs with that I formation alignment. In the pistol, instead of being, you know, 5-7 yards back, we move the quarterback up slightly, and you know, about 4 yards back from the line of scrimmage, and we're able to put a back behind him at a depth of about, again, 6 to 7 yards, and then we can still align backs to his left and to his right. Now we can load the box with potential blockers, with potential runners, and potential receivers, especially when you have a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson, still keep plays like read option runs. Now you can run a lot more fill blocks, lead blocks, and trap blocks, because you can incorporate H-backs and up-backs a lot more easily as well. Again, that you have a back behind the quarterback, but you can also have another back in the backfield off to his side, slightly ahead of him, that sniffer, that H-back roll. So now we can pull guys, we can have arc blocks, we can have triple option, we can have pop passes and releases, and we're keeping players in the box. So this is, again, like a little bit opposite of what the spread will do. We're keeping players in the box here. We're forcing the defense to put guys in the box.
Right.
And now we have isolated one-on-one matchups to the outside with our wide receivers. And so, again, the pistol is this nice in-between space that Carolina used with a lot of success last year. Marty Morningweg and Greg Roman, who are respectively the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator in Baltimore, are both guys who had experience with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. When they were successful, it was very heavy, a pistol-run quarterback offense with Kaepernick in San Francisco in 2013-ish time.
Yeah.
That's what you expect to see from Lamar. It's not going to put up gaudy numbers. He's not going to be one of the most efficient, one of the most dynamic passers in the league. But this team is going to be – again, we talked about this with Arizona last week – inconvenient to prepare for because of the things that they do differently. And then if you don't have the athletes to tag Justice Hill, Lamar Jackson, and Marquise Brown all in space, which like most defenses are going to struggle to handle that much speed, they're going to rip off explosive plays on you. They're going to score in chunks. And so it's not dissimilar to Arizona in terms of the uniqueness.
They're going to be hard to – right. They're going to be hard to defend.
The distinct nature of this offense is going to cause defenses problems.
That's a really good way to put it, because I think when you look at this offense and you look at the roster and the depth chart and the players that they have, there's some nice names. They're fine, but I don't think anybody's fearing this depth chart, right? Nobody's afraid that they can't keep up with this Baltimore Ravens team, but the difficulty then comes in the scheme. It's like – It's like the NFL's version of going up against a triple option team in college, right? I am not the exact parallel, but it's one of those things.
Baltimore
where
ran the triple option last year.
Where
not a lot,
you,
but they did.
You should beat this team on paper. The Ravens' offense should not really be able to keep up with a lot of teams, especially playoff teams, on paper. But if you can't stop their unique style, you got a problem. And this defense, I think, is a lot of fun too, because they're going to get after you. It's looks a lot different than it has in years past. I mean, Earl Thomas is their starting free safety, which is just, I don't know if I could ever get over that. They got Tony Jefferson, Earl Thomas, Jimmy Smith, Marlon Humphrey in their secondary. I think it's a really strong secondary. And they got a lot of guys that they'll throw at you on the defensive line. Ravens are always pretty creative in there with how they're throwing stuff at the fronts. And, you know, I'm just going to say it. Kenny Young's going to solidify himself as one of the best young linebackers in the game this season, if he's not already.
Wow.
So
aggressive.
There you
incorrect.
Go.
Continue.
Nope, I don't need to. That's what I'm ending with.
Are you huge on Kenny Young?
I do
not know this.
I really like Kenny Young, and I like Kenny Young coming out. But
this is like sixth round draft pick Kenny Young, right?
Correct.
What round was he picked?
I don't think it was that late. Let me look.
It's fourth. I just found it on the depth chart. Okay. This is fourth round draft pick Kenny Young. Yeah.
Yep. I think Kenny Young solidifies the starting role in this team and then breaks out.
Listen,
I really do. I like Kenny Young.
There's room next to Onwuasor, like, I guess. Sure. Go for it. Live your dreams.
I did live my dream, Ben. That's what I'm going with.
And your dream is Kenny Young in the fourth round.
That Kenny Young is one of the best young linebackers in the game. Give me a rookie. Who you like?
I will say, just as an aside, people think this defense is going to be worse. It's not. It's still going to be really good. Secondary is uber talented.
Yeah,
defensive
really
line is absolutely
worse.
Still going to be able to get a pass rush. People think that they don't have pass rush.
Why would
they
do. Why would it be worse? Just because they lost CJ?
Yeah, Weddle's gone. Mosley's gone.
Oh, yeah, Weddle's gone. Right.
Yeah, they're lacking for some big name pass rushers. But if you can't get, you can get by with Pernell McPhee, Tim Williams, Matt Judon, Shane Ray, and Jalen Ferguson.
No, I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. So obviously he hasn't been practicing, and it's critical that he does. Marquise Brown is the big name, but to me, the guy who's going to be huge is Justice Hill, and we both like Justice Hill a fair bit. I think the fourth round was the right spot for him. I'm on record as saying Justice Hill in Baltimore is the best fit of the 2019 NFL draft. It is absolutely a thick running back room. I get that. Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, Kenneth Dixon, Justice Hill. But listen, I'm telling you, there's going to be design runs on 35 plays. There's going to be two backs in the backfield. Justice Hill is able to catch. He's the most dynamic of those runners in space. And then when it comes to the pistol-style offense that I was discussing, Hill has experience running those concepts from those alignments in Oklahoma State. It should be a smooth transition for him to move to their option-style concepts and a lot of their power concepts as well, also borrowed from Big 12 running games. So I think Justice Hill, Mark Ingram is a good player. I got love for Gus Edwards. Kenneth Dixon breaks tackles at an enormous rate. But it's really hard to envision Justice Hill's touches going poorly for him. And when that's the case, you continue to garner more touches year in and year out. So I think that as the year goes on, he continues to become a bigger and bigger part of the offense.
Antoine Wesley, my boy.
Wow.
I really liked Antoine Wesley coming out. Everybody was talking about TJ Vasher at the beginning of the year at Texas Tech, and it did not take me very long to go, nope, he's not the guy you want to talk about. That's the guy on the other side. Antoine Wesley, man. Really long frame, thin frame. I think he's got to put on a decent amount of weight here in the NFL, but I think he's so smooth for his size. I think he's very fluid. He's not super fast, but he's got plenty of breakaway speed for being a guy that big. His skill set, I'm not saying he's Mike Evans, but it reminds me of Mike Evans. I think he wins in similar ways to the ways that Mike Evans won when he was coming out of Texas A&M. And so I do think that there's kind of a similar path for him to have that kind of success, especially in a room where, I mean, Marquise Brown, he's going to get a lot of attention. Miles Boykin, even with him being as athletic as he is. I mean, they've got guys in the wide receiver room, but it's not like it's solidified. I think Antoine Wesley, absolutely, for the size profile and the skill set that he has, could make a difference in this Ravens wide receiver room. And so, not sure if it's going to be year one, because I do think that he's got to get stronger. I think he's got to put on weight. But I'm a big fan of Antoine Wesley. I like him here in Baltimore.
He needs weight.
He what?
Desperately needs weight.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah.
He needs
two peanut butter sandwiches. It's the college trick, right? You go from high school to college. Two peanut butter sandwiches before bed. Hit the bulk. Casein protein. Let's go, Antoine. We got 1,000-yard years to put up.
Wow. Okay. Let's dial it back, Tiger. There's an undrafted free agent who's like 8 on the depth chart, and you're asking for 1,000-yard years.
Antoine Wesley and Kenny Young. I stan Young Kings. Pittsburgh Steelers. A lot different. Looks a lot different.
Culture Antoine. Team, brother.
Man.
For the culture.
Lord have mercy. To quote our friend Betts, culture ain't running a 4-3. It's just, it looks way different than what it used to, if nothing else, but because Antonio Brown's not there. Antonio Brown was one of the most dominant wide receivers over the last 6 years. I mean, the production.
James Washington's going to be good, and I was going to be right on him the whole time. After a year of pretending I didn't like him because I thought people would yell at me, I am ready to pretend like I've been standing him this whole time.
He was a lot better.
He's good in his sophomore year.
He was a lot better. I got to watch the Steelers, not their first team, because it wasn't Ben Roethlisberger who was in the game, and Juju didn't play. But
we got a little Josh Dobbs.
It was Josh Dobbs and James Washington, and they actually played pretty well together. Wait, who's the other quarterback? Not Dobbs. Mason Rudolph. So Rudolph and James Washington obviously have that connection, that Oklahoma State connection going on. But Washington looked a lot better than what he did last year. And I think over the course of – man, I think we get carried away with these young guys performing early. And instead of celebrating it maybe the way that we should, we think that that's the norm. And it's just not. A lot of these young guys, they're going through a lot. Like, they're trying to get in their playbook all the time. They've got NFL coaching for the first time. They might be coming to an NFL system for the first time. Living in a new place. Totally new environment. Might have to be putting on a ton of weight. Whatever it is, there are so many reasons why rookies might not succeed right away in the NFL. And James Washington, when I watched him last year, he was a guy that just straight up did not look comfortable. And if you're not comfortable, you're not going to be confident. If you're not confident, you're not going to play well. That's just the nature of any position. And I thought Washington, when he took the field against the Buccaneers, even just in a preseason game last Friday, he looked so much more confident. And you could see that ability of what made him a touchdown machine and a downfield stud when he was at Oklahoma State. So I'm not saying that we're going to get Oklahoma State numbers from James Washington or anything, but it is worth noting on a lot of these rookie guys that, hey, yes, there are going to be some that break out. There are going to be the guys that kind of play a ton of minutes, have a ton of success their rookie year, but we should celebrate those as they should be, as almost like outliers. And these other guys, it takes time for some of these teams. And so that's my James Washington thoughts.
You ready to play win-loss?
Sure, yeah.
Week one, Patriots, at Patriots.
Oh, are we going through the whole schedule?
Real quick.
Okay, loss.
Home versus Seahawks.
Win.
At 49ers.
Win.
Home versus Cincy.
Win.
Home versus Ravens.
Loss.
At Chargers.
Loss.
Home versus Dolphins.
Win.
Home versus Colts.
Andrew Luck, giant wild card, but I'll say loss.
Home versus Rams.
Loss.
At Browns.
Loss.
At Bengals.
Win.
Home versus Browns.
Win.
At Cardinals.
Oh, man. Let me look at this defense real quick. I'm going to say...
Say it!
Loss.
Whoa! All right. Home versus Bills.
Win.
At Jets.
Win.
At Ravens.
Win.
All right, we have ourselves a 9-7 Pittsburgh Steelers team.
Okay.
Beating the Ravens in week 17. Here's the thing, and this is what I did. I found this in research while I was working on that Ravens piece. Cleveland Browns are the favorites to win the division, which is obviously like very wild and very exciting. We can talk about that. Next up, the Pittsburgh Steelers at plus 195, and then the Baltimore Ravens are at plus 275. I think Baltimore is significantly more likely than Pittsburgh to win the division. I think that plus 275 for the Ravens is a great value bet if you want to just throw, you know, a couple units on it and just let it sit. This Steelers team will again not be able to cover anyone and will very likely struggle to put up the same amount of points that they did in previous seasons, the offense was already showing signs of slowing down last year in terms of their output. And key loss that is underappreciated, Mike Munchak, is gone. And that will have an effect on the running game. When they transitioned from Le'Veon Bell to James Conner, basically without a blip, it was in large part because this offensive line is unbelievable in terms of the run blocking they turn in and year out.
Yes.
I mean, he made something out of Alejandro Villanueva, right? Obviously, Ramon Foster has improved greatly under him as well. But you cannot expect this line to be as well without Munchak in the line to be as good without Munchak in the building. I think that will affect the running game.
That's
James
Conner,
I think, is a good player, but probably not as good as he seemed last year. You assume he's going to regress back to kind of what he was. And then, yeah, like, I love James Washington and Deontay Johnson to replace and Dontay Moncrief to replace Antonio Brown, but I'm here to tell you they won't. You know, their combined efforts will not have the same effect on a defense that Antonio Brown does. So I think the defense, the offense takes a step back. I think the defense still can't cover worth a lick. So I'm nowhere on the Steelers, man. I mean, I don't, like, this is a team that's been historically good, and it's tough to bet against them. But
right,
man, it's you gotta spell it out for me, you know?
Right. I had them there at 9-7. There were a couple of wins that I gave them. I could very easily see them going 7-9. I don't know how much worse they would be than 7-9, just because I still think, you know, it's Mike Tomlin. I still think it's Ben Roethlisberger. It's the Steelers. I think they're going to play well. But I can see 7-9 from them, certainly. I understand the bets. It makes sense. Give me a rookie. Who do you like on this team?
Oh, man. Like,
do not pick Devin Bush.
I'm not going to take Devin Bush.
All right, I wouldn't get to take him anyways.
Four pickings. I was not a Benny Snell fan. I was not a huge Justin Lane fan. Now, I like picking him in the third, but from all accounts in camp, you know, he's not really transitioning great. Isaiah Bugs, I was in that camp until I saw the combine numbers, and then I, you know, ski-daddled out of town. Sutton Smith is fun and interesting. Ulysses Gilbert is fun and interesting, but, like, I don't see these guys getting significant playing time for as long as Keith Butler, for whatever reason.
Now you're running out of people. You're running out of people to pick.
Right. I want to go with Olusun Kanmi Adeni, the UDFA from 2018, who I loved out of Toledo, but I don't know if I get to do that. I'll go with, I think Gilbert has the best chance.
Oh, my God, I was going to pick Gilbert!
I mean, that's the thing, is, like,
I'm a Gilbert stan.
If it's not Devin Bush, Gilbert, it's going to take injury in front of him, but Gilbert can see flying time. He can be a dime backer. He's had some successful preseason reps. He's had a good camp from the things that I've read. He's a better true off-ball guy than Sutton Smith, and they're weak at off-ball. You know what I mean? They don't want to be playing Mark Barron. Nobody wants to play Mark Barron, for God's sakes. Obviously, Devin Bush is up in front of him, and so it's tricky. But I'll say Gilbert. It's not a great class.
Gilbert was one of the best players at the East-West Shrine event, and I felt like nobody talked about it. I went up and talked to him after one of the practices, and I just loved his mentality about how he was telling me all kinds of nuances about playing each linebacker position, loved his versatility there. And that's important when you're going to the East-West Shrine game. You know you're a linebacker that's probably getting picked. You're probably going to be a day three pick at that point, especially for the position that he plays. So he was learning everything he could. He said that he was having coaches drill him on all the different linebacker positions when he was there because he was trying to get it down, trying to prove his versatility. He's a guy who has a high motor. I thought he had a really great eye for the ball and where contact was going. So big fan of his. I think he was the second highest rookie from week one of the preseason, according to Pro Football Focus. So, really nice first game.
I would say the other one I thought of was Zach Gentry, just because I think probably by default he's tight end two on this roster. So maybe he gets targets, but Gentry does not excite me as a player. So,
Zach Gentry.
Gentry.
Yeah. Not a fan. Cincinnati Bengals. New head coach. New head coach. They're trying to conjure up some of the Sean McVay coaching tree magic. They get the Rams old quarterback coach. They get Zach Taylor now as their head coach. Trying to bring up that innovative offense. Trying to see if they can stay ahead of the curve on things. But they're trying to stay ahead of the curve with a roster that's not. So that's where kind of things lie. I'm not a big believer in John Ross. I never have been. I think he's a speed guy who has a constantly hurt lower body, which is not exactly a great combo. AJ Green, we now know, is going to miss some time. Andy Dalton kind of is what he is at this point. Will Tyler Eifert even play? Joe Mixon is obviously a stud, but how much are you going to rely on that as a main component when you don't have... I guess they're hoping that they could just take deep shots. I guess they're hoping that they're a run-centric team and then can take deep shots with players like Ross or Tyler Boyd, I guess. I don't really understand what they're doing, but it's a roster that kind of confuses me on offense. Do you see an identity here outside of Mixon?
Right. Yeah, the thing is, like, run it, but just, you know, replace four-fifths of your offensive line before you try to run it. Or, you know, illegally replace AJ Green's leg.
There's just not a lot there. I mean, if they're in a back and forth battle with a team and they can stay on pace, like a slower pace, and control the ball and something that allows themselves to continue to keep Joe Mixon involved in the game no matter what, okay, Bengals might be able to hang around with some teams. But shoot, if you turn up the offensive dial and we start scoring some points, where are you going? Is the offensive line's probably not going to block nearly long enough for you to drop back and get the ball to one of these guys, because I don't think they're elite separators. They're not elite go-to players, especially without AJ Green. So then what are you doing? It's not a good roster, man.
Right, and the thing is, like, people, like, you know, oh, like, Tyler Boyd is underrated. Like,
sure. Yeah, sure.
But also, your passing offense isn't very good. So, like, he can be underrated if you want, but, like, to a degree. Right, which is that, okay, like, all right, if you're telling me that, you know, we can move this guy out of Cincy and put him with a better quarterback than Dalton, he'd be more productive, like, that's fine. I'm not going to fight you on that. I'm just going to say, like, if you want me to say AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, and John Ross slash Josh Malone slash whoever you want to put at three is, like, you know, a top 15 wide receiver core, like, yeah, Green's good, but you need to look at some of the other wide receiver cores in the league. Like, they're four deep. They're five deep. This is Green and Boyd, who potentially is underappreciated. If Green's not putting up $150, this passing offense isn't going to do much to scare me. And obviously, like, you know, if Tyler Eifert is healthy, yeah, sure. But, like, if we're playing the if Tyler Eifert is healthy game, well, then I've got, you know, like, used vacuums to sell you. Like, it's just he hasn't been able to consistently stay on the field, right? This is a problem. And it's funny, when you look
I think you were supposed to go with the phrase, like, I've got waterfront property in Oklahoma City that I'd like to sell you.
Whatever. Like, it's the whole, like, you know.
Used vacuums.
I'm worked up a little bit here. I'm firing on all cylinders, Trevor.
Like a vacuum would be.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. That's funny. It's frustrating because when you look at this starting team, like, this is one of the older starting 22s in the league. And then the team hasn't been successful. And so, listen, I've been as critical of Marvin Lewis as a person you'll find. I did a whole tweet thread about how he's the greatest comeback superhero story of our generation, because he just never goes down. He can't be defeated. Right? Like, I've ripped the dude. But you're trying to sell me right now on the amount of veteran second contract players that you have on the field right now. You're trying to sell me on the idea that just changing Marvin Lewis moves this team from mediocrity to the playoffs.
Well, and the thing is,
if you're not going to be getting young players, cheaper contracts, and rebuilding, because they're not rebuilding.
Well, I mean, they need to quick, because
they're not rebuilding.
They've got a young man's mentality in the coaching staff and the head man that they signed, and they've got an old man's roster. It just doesn't work out. You've got a lot of guys from the old regime who are playing important roles. Okay, you bring in Zach Taylor. Zach Taylor's a young guy. He's a first-time head coach. He was just a quarterback's coach. He's learning from one of the youngest minds in the game. He's clearly going to be new age in a lot of the things that he's doing. And you've got guys who are embedded in the Marvin Lewis era playing important roles on this team. This might be...
No, I was going to say, I need to make a correction. I said the Bengals, like, haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. It's an exaggeration. They made the playoffs 5 times in the last 10 years, and they've lost in the wild card every single time.
That's how Marvin Lewis has stuck around. They've made the playoffs a decent amount of times. So this might be, man, the last year that this Bengals team, as we know it, looks this way. Because if Zach Taylor's going to be your head coach, you better flip the switch quick if you guys don't win this year. And I don't think they're going to win this year.
Right, because it's like, all right, if Dalton is playoff caliber, which I just do not think he is, but let's say he is.
But even if he is playoff caliber, that's not enough anymore, correct? They've made the playoffs 5 times in the last 10 years. Dalton's been the guy. Dalton can't get them to the next level. That's the whole point of them moving on from Marvin Lewis.
Right. The thing is, well, I mean, I would argue if that's the whole point of moving on from Marvin Lewis, they should have moved on from Andy Dalton. But
well, I'm.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's kind of where I'm going.
Right. Exactly. What I'm saying is, like, if you think with Dalton you can put a playoff team out there and that's proven, and Dalton, like, you know, Zach Taylor the first year is good, then you have a reason and a justification for retaining guys like Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap and Dre Kirkpatrick and you know, AJ Green, if you want to throw him in there, and Tyler Eifert, whatever you want. But the moment you say, all right, we need to draft the young guy to replace Dalton and we're ready to start him, you know, in 2020, then, and once you're in rebuild and once it's young player focused and once it's now we got to rebuild this team, then like Atkins, Dunlap, like these are good players. I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm saying you got to get on the phone. And you got to say, listen, you know, playoff team in need of pass rushers. I've got myself some of the best pass rushers that have just not had a chance to be on a winning team in freaking 8 years. What are you going to send me? Because for as long, the age of this roster is frustrating because if you have pieces that are still valuable, that if you were to move them, the capital you could recoup would drastically expedite the process of your rebuild.
Of course.
Well, you have to be able to commit to that.
What do you think AJ Green fetches in a trade?
I mean, I don't think it's a one.
I don't think it's a one either.
A good day two.
I think it's a good. I think it's a second rounder.
Yes.
I think for sure.
Right. Now, like a Geno Atkins, I'd like if I were the, you know, Los Angeles Rams and Ndamukong Suh left and Atkins was on the table, I'm sending a one tomorrow. Atkins is an unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
And he's just been sitting in Cincinnati. And the average NFL fan probably has no appreciation for how good Geno Atkins is. And that's a frustrating problem.
Yeah.
You know, just from a player evaluation standpoint. But then for Atkins, it's annoying because you want to like tell Cincy, like, listen, if it's not Dalton, get rid of him, trade me, use the pick, trade up for Herbert, get your ducks in a row, and let me go play for somebody who's going to give me a ring. God dang it.
That was well thought out there. That was good. Do you have a rookie on this team? Speaking of age, we've focused on age. Do you have a rookie that you like? My guy's Deshaun Davis. I don't know how much playing time he's going to get, but I am such a big Deshaun Davis fan.
I'm so impressed that you even know Deshaun Davis is on this roster.
Well, brother.
I guess I'm not surprised, but like, I had no idea.
I keep up with my players, my guys. Deshaun Davis was one of my guys throughout the whole process. I got a good friend of mine who covers Auburn, who was telling me a lot about Deshaun Davis as an NFL draft guy. We were chit-chatting back in January, and he was telling me to get Davis on my radar and watch some tape and things like that, and obviously Davis was a Senior Bowl guy as well, so I got to go talk to him at the Senior Bowl, listen to him at the podium. Just love the way that he goes about things from shoulders up, man. The way he sees the game, the way he calls it out on the field, the way he commands a defense, he is such a great middle linebacker. Now, he is athletically limited, and that is a problem in the NFL. So, his ceiling, not nearly as high as it might be for some other linebackers, but in terms of playing the position, playing smart, commanding other players, being a leader, being a centerpiece, he can do all of that other things. And so I don't know how much playing time he's going to get just because I don't know what they're going to think about his athletic limitations. I don't know how much they're going to show up in the NFL. That is something to note, but boy, do I think that he does everything else well from the linebacker position. So big Deshaun Davis fan.
I think it's worth the 10 seconds it'll take to remind you that this team drafted Drew Sample in the second round, and we all just are pretending that's okay.
Never have.
Yeah, I mean, just like this just happened, and we were all like, fine, let's move on to the next pick. No one just stopped the draft and said we all need to take a day to consider what just happened. Listen, Ronnell Wren in the fourth round was a great bargain.
Yeah, it's a good pick. It's a good pick.
It was a great bargain, and the thing is, this team's got Andrew Billings at the nose. They've got Josh Tupoa, the Colorado kid, behind him. Those are some big, big bodies in the nose. They like that mass. They like that ability to hold the point of attack, but there's very little pass rush between those two. Ronnell Wren ain't a perfect run defender, but he has the size to play the nose, and if he's just passable in terms of what he's giving you against the run and clogging up that space, man, I don't know. If it's third and long, you want Billings on the field or you want Ronnell Wren? I'll leave that up to you. I think that he's got a great avenue for some situational rushes, and we know he can deliver on those.
Final team, Cleveland Browns. Our Cleveland Browns. As lifelong Cleveland Browns fans.
Hello.
We.
I'm always like, I liked Cleveland Browns like since Sashi. Like at the Carson Wentz trade, I was like, firstly, I love you guys. Thank you. But secondly, like now this team is very interesting. I'm very pumped about this.
Baker Mayfield, Nick Chubb, David Njoku, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry. I mean, the fun that this offense could potentially be is through the roof. The ceiling is the roof, okay?
As is famously said on this podcast, the ceiling is the roof.
This is without a doubt the most highly anticipated Cleveland Browns team since when? Even when the Browns were okay, like doing things in the early 2000s, this team's got way more hype than those Browns teams did.
Well, absolutely. You haven't had as positive of a sign as Baker's year, half of a year,
right,
for Freddie Kitchens,
right,
in this millennium.
It's been decades since the Browns have had this much of a chance to be successful, to be entertaining, to go after playoff spots, to go after playoff wins, AFC championship games. Who knows? They have got a formula that they think can really get it done. And they've got two great offensive minds, I think, in Freddie Kitchens, who showed what he could do with Baker Mayfield. And there are things that I think that Todd Monken did well last year. I think that him and Dirk Koetter in Tampa Bay, it was a weird mix. It didn't end up going well. The whole chemistry between him and Dirk with who's calling plays and who's doing what and all that kinds of stuff, that just went sour, I think, pretty quickly. And so I do think that Todd's a guy who shoots it straight, is pretty innovative, pretty motivating of his players. And so I think the fact that he's on staff with Kitchens should be a pretty nice compliment there. They have Steve Wilks as their defensive coordinator. But, man, top to bottom, this Browns team's awesome. You know, you go over to the defensive side of the football, Myles Garrett, Sheldon Richardson. You know, those are guys that I'm excited about on that defensive line. Larry Ogunjobi's another guy who I like. And then in the secondary, they've got guys like Denzel Ward, Greedy Williams, who hoping he fares a little bit better than he did in his first preseason game. But they're putting together a squad, Ben. They're putting together guys that will give them a chance to win football games. And that's the most important part for me when I look at this Browns roster, is that both on offense, when it comes to talent, at the right positions to put up enough points to keep up with enough teams to win enough games. On the flip side, you have a defense that'll be willing to get aggressive, to go risky for turnovers, be able to get a few, get a couple of extra possessions, allow offense to do what they need to do, go win yourself some football games. That's why I think from offensive defensive standpoint, what they're doing, the philosophies they have, and the players that they have in place, I'm really, really excited about this Browns team.
You ready to play a fun game?
Oh, boy.
The fun game is called Let's Look at the Browns starting depth chart exactly 735 days ago and have full-on discourse about what we're dealing with.
Okay,
here.
Okay.
So August 1st, 2018, not exactly seven, whatever I said. But this, like, you know, focusing
Hold
here
on, wait. Did you say 700 days ago?
Yes, like 2 years ago.
You said 2018, though. You just said 2018. Oh.
Okay, August 1st, 2017.
Okay. I was going to say, do you know how many...
I know how long a year is.
Okay, yes. All right. Just making sure. I'm just making sure. I'm looking out for you.
All right. So, David Njoku Cody Kessler, Deshaun Kizer, and Brock Osweiler were in a voracious three-way battle for the starting quarterback job with Kevin Hogan as the dark horse. Of course, during the preseason in camp, they were throwing to such names as Corey Coleman, Kenny Britt, Ricardo Lewis, and actually Rashard Higgins. So big ups for Rashard Higgins, who is still stuck around. David Njoku, of course, had just been selected as well. Now, they were playing behind a good offensive line, definitely good. Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio, J.C. Tretter, Kevin Zeitler. Obviously, Bitonio and Tretter still on this team. Right tackle was Sean Coleman versus Cameron Irving versus Roderick Johnson. So it wasn't pretty there, but the offensive line was generally strong. Now, of course, they were handing it off to Isaiah Crowell, Matt Days, and Duke Johnson was also on this team. Now, of course, Duke is in Houston. Defensively, oh, yes, Myles Garrett, the new shiny draft pick, was rushing off one end. They were running Greg Williams 3-4, of course, so Danny Shelton was starting over Larry Ogunjobi.
Perfect.
And Emmanuel Ogbah was rushing as the other end.
Perfect.
Jamie Collins, recently acquired from New England, was rushing
off
one outside corner. And Joe Schobert, now their starting middle linebacker.
Future Pro Bowler.
Yes, was the other outside guy, Dominic Alexander, Christian Kirksey, playing in the middle. Now, at corner, here we go. Joe Hayden.
Gator Jamar great.
Taylor. Yep, Joe Hayden, Jamar Taylor, Jason McCourty, and Brienne Brody Calhoun were the main names to pay attention to. Of course, McCourty was awful, went to New England, and was suddenly good. Wonder what changed. Jamar Taylor, I literally couldn't tell you what happened to him after this. And starting at safety, they had Jabril Peppers again, one of their 2017 draft picks, very exciting. But beside him, it was Calvin Pryor, Ed Reynolds, and Ibrahim Campbell. Looking at this team just 2 years ago, it's amazing we allowed this team to compete in the National Football League. It's shocking.
They went 0-16 at one point, so I don't think they really did compete.
Right, but this is what I'm saying, is this is the team that went 0-16, the 2017 team. Literally, it's only 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
The amount of turnover on this roster, and also, like, and you know, it might be too early to say this, but the success of the turnover of this roster in terms of, like, you know, they really, really hit it well, changing over running back, changing over wide receiver, changing over edge, changing over corner. Like, they've got good – they've been hitting draft picks well. Dorsey's done a fantastic job acquiring talent on the cheap. Obviously, Dorsey has his approach that is of you know, questionable moral fiber, but, you know, he's acquired great talent on the cheap. They've filled out the defensive depth chart unbelievably. They've done a good job, you know, eschewing themselves of those coaches that put talent in bad positions to be successful. It's a complete 180, an unprecedented — I'm young, I don't really know — an unprecedented 180 for an NFL roster. And, like, every win that they have is just a win for us as draft guys, because this is what it's about. Like, this is what we sell a little bit.
Building
it's like,
through
hey,
the draft.
In 2 years, you could go from the 2017 Cleveland Browns to the 2019 Cleveland Browns.
That's the Draft Network's new slogan. Give me a rookie.
Amen.
Who do you like?
I mean, there's a lot to pick. All right, first I have to make sure I go back to the correct depth chart, so give me a second. Okay. I mean, easy guess is Mack Wilson. I loved Matt coming out. Obviously, he had the flashy first preseason game.
Yes, he did.
Joe Schober and Christian Kirksey have been good for the Browns at times. Sione Takitaki at BYU was obviously drafted ahead of Wilson. But I think of those four, if you ask me who's the best coverage backer tomorrow, it's either Kirksey or Wilson, and I'm not sure it's not Wilson. It's steep praise to give for a fifth-round pick as a rookie, but Wilson's strength is in coverage. That's going to get him on the field at third down. If you continue to make splash plays in coverage, as he did against the Redskins in week one of the preseason, well, they're going to try to leave you on the field as much as possible because they want you an opportunity to make those splash plays. That's what counts. And so Wilson's got a path for playing time. I think he was woefully underdrafted. I think he's a long-term starter.
I think it's really important for Greedy Williams to become the guy that they need him to be. And I know that there are reasons why he wasn't a first-round pick, mainly that he hates tackling. But look, man, the whole plan here is Denzel Ward on one side, Greedy Williams on the other. That's the plan. They want to be able to go cover three, man on you, single high, and go about as aggressive as you possibly can. Put some pressure on the pocket, send some extra blitzes, be able to sell out, because that's why these guys are on the team. As I was talking about before, they're building a defensive philosophy that allows you to get so aggressive that you're putting pressure up front, you're making risks for turnovers, and you've got talented guys who can play man coverage on the outside. So Greedy Williams is, I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I don't really know what his learning curve is going to be, because that's all about upstairs, man. That's going to be a decision that he's got to make, because Greedy's got all the talent in the world, but it's kind of sometimes just a want to. It's got to, sometimes he sees a play that's got to be made, the hard play, and Greedy didn't always make it when he was at LSU, especially in that last season once he realized that he was going to be one of the top cornerbacks taken. So now he's in the NFL. He's a second-round pick, not a first-round pick. Maybe that's something that motivated him. He struggled a little bit in that first preseason game, but you're learning the playbook. You're learning chemistry. That part is okay. They need him to become that guy so they can solidify their defense as one that can get as aggressive as they want to allow that offense to get as many possessions as possible to score points.
Unleash Baker.
Can't wait. Our Browns, future John Super Bowl Logan champions. Baby. This is the creed of the Draft Network. What you could be. You could go from the 2017 Browns to the 2019 Browns in just two short
one whole chance seasons to draft Baker Mayfield and truly become the TDN team of a generation. Or not Baker Mayfield, DK Metcalf.
Oh man, they did. That would have solidified them as like TDN's adopted team.
DK, Baker, Nick Chubb. Don't even put anybody else out in the field. Just run those four.
Would have wept tears. We got one more division that we're looking at this week. And we got Fan Friday coming up on Friday. Four more divisions next week. I gotta throw Ben a curveball at some point next week. I gotta tell him that we're gonna do one division and then absolutely flip it on him once the record button comes on.
Because there's nothing listeners like more than bad content.
Than Ben being absolutely befuddled. I agree. And until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.